ظاہر کی آنکھ سے نہ تماشا کرے کوئی. میننگ یو کین سی اے لاٹ آف تھنگز ود آئی سائٹ بٹ دیٹس ناٹ گڈ انف. ظاہر کی آنکھ سے نہ تماشا کرے کوئی, ہو دیکھنا تو دیدے دل وا کرے کوئی.
Beautiful.
What you need is insight, not just eyesight. You need to open the eyes of your heart.
I am Sadia Tariq and you are listening to Dhani, the podcast. We have Dr. Azra Raza as our guest today. She's been on Dhani before, and today we talk about grief, sadness, the difference between eyesight and insight, the reason why we are here, the quest for the divine, and being of service to his creation. Apart from all this, Dr. Azra shares her reasons for writing her book, peppered with incredible Urdu poetry. Thank you for listening. Dr. Azra, can I please tell you that I am so happy for you to be back on Dhani. I have been looking forward to this, like really, really looking forward to this.
Thank you very much, Sadia. So am I.
Pertaining to the current climate where we have been caught under, where we have been sort of forced into our own homes, really, for the sake of ourselves and for the sake of others, looking out for others really, and ourselves. And in the process, we have lost, as they say, we've lost years. And, you know, we're not going to count 2020. It wasn't a year, you know. And then a lot of us have lost very close ones. Again, caught up in this with this virus. And there is a sense of grief and there's a sense of loss pertaining to that. So I'm not just encompassing you or forcing you actually just in the last 2 years, but I want to understand really that what is grief? What is sadness? What is that inherent sadness that all of our souls feel? What are we essentially looking for? So this is one big main thing.
Yeah. Well, that's a very big main and very main thing, I must say. It has been a very difficult couple of years, of course, for everybody around the world. And it's brought us all together in many ways as well, whether it is to grieve together or to celebrate little things in the confines of our homes, or the new kind of work restrictions under which we have been working that have brought so many of us much closer together. So I suppose there have been many aspects to this pandemic. But Sadia, I think you know very well that on a daily basis, I deal with grief and sorrow and anguish of cancer patients.
Sure. Yes.
A very strange thing is that the disease I treat is acute myeloid leukemia, which is a deadly disease of the bone marrow. It's a cancer of blood cells. But I have been committed to finding cancer early and early, so I treat pre-leukemia or trying to find the leukemia earlier stage, at its earlier stage. And as a result, about 80% of my patients have pre-leukemia, 20 to 30% will develop acute leukemia. Now, in both cases, basically there is no cure. The only cure for pre-leukemia is when I can send a patient to transplant, but then I turn over the patient to another team that is doing transplant. So my point is that every patient I see is going to die of their disease. And there's just not much I can do about it right now. We really can't prolong survival beyond a few months. And this has been the case for me for the last 40 years. So, as you can imagine, I've been dealing with disease, with loss and grief for a very long time.
Yeah, sure. Both on a personal and a professional level.
Yes, both on a personal and a professional level. What would you, I was thinking that maybe I'll read a little passage from my book about what it means to lose a beloved person.
Absolutely.
And this is the aftermath of my book, The First Cell, and the Human Costs of Pursuing Cancer to the Last. It's a book about cancer, and its foundation is patient stories. What are we doing to patients, and how well are we doing in terms of helping them? So I describe two separate young people, Umar and Andrew. One is 38 years old, one is 22 years old when they're diagnosed. And they die within 16 months of their diagnosis, both of them. One of brain cancer and the other of a bone cancer. And in both cases, their mothers were with them 24/7. And so, and I was a witness to this directly because I was very close to both of them. The two mothers are my friends. And Andrew, who died, was my daughter's best friend. Not her boyfriend, because our dear Andrew was gay, but her best friend. So his mother is one of my very good friends. And then Umar's mother, Nahida, happens to be one of my very close friends in Pakistan. So I'll just read something about what grief meant to these two mothers. Now, the title of this aftermath in the book is Give Sorrow Words. Nahid Elena. These are the names of two mothers. Some sorrows are unfathomable, language incapable of expressing them. What combination of letters could possibly speak the unspoken thoughts of the mothers, Nahid and Elena, as they bid unhurried farewells in their serially dying, to the serially dying parts of the creatures they birthed and nurtured for decades? The anguish has no beginning and no end, no relief, no ascent or descent, no respite, collapsing past, present, and future into one bottomless pit. A new language needs invention to encompass the defenselessness, the vulnerability of these two mothers who, with utmost delicacy, eased their boys into the grave, each over a period of 16 months, tormented until their child's last breaths about how to make the bewildering departure less painful. Umar had 7 surgeries to remove slices of arms and legs, a cancer-filled shoulder.
Oh dear.
In Andrew's case, first the limbs went, followed by the bile and bladder, then the eyesight, and in a final insult, he could swallow no more. To dare to mourn with Nahid and Elena, one must own the sorrows of the universe. No linguistic hyperbole can do justice. Language itself becomes speechless, vocabulary held hostage by the raw agony of such incalculable scales. The infinite care with which Elena washed, scrubbed, and dressed the wasted, limp body of a 23-year-old, or the relentless whacking, blistering, piercing, frightful terrors haunting Nahid in every waking hour and in sleep, deplete the hubris of death, elevate the status of motherhood to where the stars lower their gaze. One spark of pain in the heart of these mothers eclipses the glory of the sun. Dust raised by their agitation conceals deserts. Their tears forcing a river to recede, dragging its forehead obsessively in front of their grief. Hota hai neha gard mein, sehra mere peeche, aur ghista hai jabi khaak pe, darya mere aage. Ghalib, next to me, the wilderness is shamed into hiding in dust. The servile river grovels in the dust before me.
How utterly painful.
Yeah. And this is what I see on a daily basis, Sadhya. And what helps me a lot as this, to understand the rawness of grief and then to take them through the multiple stages of grief, these families who remain in touch with me years afterwards, poetry helps me because Ghalib, for example, invented a new language, a new genre to address this. And it helps me. Bring a modicum of relief at least to me.
When you talk about the stages of grief, would you consider sharing with us some of the stages?
I mean, this, darling, the stages of grief have been well described in many studies. I mean, for example, the famous professor Elizabeth Kubler-Ross in the 70s said that when a person is given a diagnosis of cancer or when a beloved person loses someone to cancer, there are stages through which they go. For example, denial, and then anger, and then bargaining, and then depression, and finally it's acceptance. And so one has to progress through these stages, whether one is a patient or a caregiver. Both go through the same. The grief has to go through the same stages as well.
Our soul is also aggrieved. It is going through a process or a stage. You know, my favorite word in the Urdu language, not that I'm quite an expert on that, is tishnagi, where there's a search, there is a want, there is something missing, and you're in that, in the search of that. What is that painful yearning of a soul?
One of the things that Ghalib has done, as I said earlier, is he's provided Urdu poetry with a new language for the elegiac, articulating the anger of loss without in any way diminishing the intensity of passion. I mean, think of this ghazal, Lazim hai ki dekho mera rasta koi din aur, tanha gaye kyun ab raho tanha koi din aur. It addresses the dead son with the necessity of reproach. The poet declares it with that it's important that the person who's absent should see his path again, then asks a pointed question, why did you go alone? That is the anguish that Ghalib is suffering from. Tanha gaye kyun? Ab raho tanha koi din aur. So stay alone until some other day. I mean, this couplet pierces because its sorrow is almost infantile. It expresses a raw irritability of grief. You know, he's demanding in a way. Lazim tha ke dekho mera rasta koi din aur. Tanha gaye kyun? Ab raho tanha koi din aur. I mean, it is so beautiful. There's no give and take in death. There's only a taking away, which becomes so final with Ghalib.
Yes, as you said, you know, there is a question which is almost infant-like, and then there's admonishment as well.
Yes, admonishment. But it's all through, I mean, these are all expressions of grief. Ghalib's breaking heart is now saying all these things.
Yeah, you know, I read something recently where I don't remember the whole of it, but this particular phrase stuck in my heart, where God has created everything, but he hasn't created sound for a broken heart.
Yes, Ghalib also accuses Jesus by saying that, yes, it's easy to resurrect someone who's dead, but what about mending my heart? So, Ibn Maryam hua kare koi, are mere dukh ki dawa kare koi.
Oh, yeah. One, as you said, we have to identify it. So, yes, there is no sound, yet we have to identify that grief and we have to find that sadness. A yes. Very, very deep and a very open acceptance of Allah's will.
Yeah. I think here I would turn to Iqbal, who said something very beautiful. He says, Zahir ki aankh se na tamasha kare koi. Meaning, you can see a lot of things with eyesight, but that's not good enough. Zahir ki aankh se na tamasha kare koi, ho dekhna to deedaye dil wa kare koi.
Beautiful.
What you need is insight, not just eyesight. You need to open the eyes of your heart. Do you agree that this is a kind of thing that brings solace? Zahir ki aankh se na tamasha kare koi. Ho dekhna to deedaye dil wa kare koi.
I totally, totally agree with this, because yes, there is the physical vision and then there is the spiritual vision. And sometimes the kalb, the heart, has to open itself. Not sometimes, I would say at all times it should have that openness. But so actually, now coming to that, wo openness jo hai, it sometimes sort of shuts down because the heart is so broken.
You know, I recently saw a Pakistani serial produced by Hum TV. Do you ever watch these?
Occasionally, not very often.
Yeah. Well, I must say that I feel there's a golden period of Urdu has arrived because of Pakistan and because of the serials and plays that they are producing and writing. A lot of these plays, by the way, are written by women, and they are taking out every stereotype and airing it and giving it voice and basically examining it. The other thing I find very moving about these plays is that a lot of them are invested in examining the internal lives of people.
Sure.
And these are people I would never meet, for example, living in the villages of Pakistan. Raqib Se is one serial I watched in which there's a lot of rural life, and it's very beautiful. And then I watched a recent one called Mere Paas Tum Ho. I would recommend that you watch it. But in any case, it's a gorgeous love story. And what happens when your love is not, in a way, consummated for permanently? What happens? Mm. And watching this play, I was very moved by some of the dialogue, especially in it. I mean, the stories may or may not grab everybody, and a lot of people may have objections, but I look at it as a phenomenal thing. First of all, the way they are speaking Urdu is so lovely, Sadia, because I have become so used to either the, Indian films, they pretend to be speaking Urdu, but it is such a ghastly version. Their pronunciations are absolutely abominable. Like Galib ki ghazal sunenge, kind of thing. But in Pakistan TV, with whatever the channel you turn on, they are speaking such pristine and chaste Urdu with perfect pronunciations. Young people who have clearly been, whose medium of education has been higher English, they are speaking this Urdu so beautifully. So first of all, that uplifts me. I recommend you should see this play.
I can sense your joy, but I will.
So there's many, many things that bring me joy in watching. So in one of the characters loses his love and dies because of it. Literally sits on the threshold and has a heart attack and dies. I won't tell you who and why and when, but one of them does. And it brought to mind this Sher by Ghalib, which goes something like this. Teshe bagher mar na saka koh kan asad. Gum gushtay khumare rusumo quyut tha. This is such a difficult sher. Just by hearing it, you feel like, is this Urdu ya Farsi? Ya ye kya zaban hai, itni mushkil.
But correct. Actually, those are my sentiments. I'm waiting for you to.
But you know, this ibham, this ambiguity will convert into a narrative intensity, which you will feel when I describe to you the meaning of this. It's simply, first of all, this takes us back to the idea that it's the poetry in Urdu is so symbolic. You have to know the background. So the first line is simply saying, Teshe bagher mar na saka koh ka nasad. The one who was digging the mountains could not die without hitting himself with the axe he was using. Now, who is this Kohkan? Tesha is an axe. Teshe bagher, without an axe, marna saka Kohkan. That one who was digging in the mountains couldn't die without the axe. Asad, of course, is Ghalib's name. And the second line, Gumgushtay khumaru rusumo huyut tha. He was stupefied. He was dizzied by the demands of tradition and custom. This is what the lines mean, but in reality, what is the story behind it is that there were this beautiful woman, Shirin, married to, she was a princess, married to the king Khusro, and this complete stonemason of some sort, Farhad, saw her and fell madly in love with her. And this is the story of Shirin and Farhad. And Khusro, her husband, as a joke, said to him, that I will give you Shirin if you can dig a stream through the mountains. Because he knew it was an impossible task. But of course, Farhad takes his axe, goes off and starts digging. And suddenly people got up to see not a stream of water, but what they call Jueshir, meaning a stream of milk. Because, you know, as the water was smashing against the rocks, it produced foam, so it looked white. So the stream looked white coming down. But anyway, as they saw it, Khusro realized that the guy has done it. He'll have to give Shirin up to him. So he basically sends an old woman to tell Farhad that unfortunately Shirin is dead. And as soon as the woman told him, Farhad took the axe and hit himself on the head and committed suicide. This is the story. And Ghalib is being a little snarky in this shair, saying that Farhad needed an axe to kill himself, which means he was not a true lover, because he started thinking about, you know, the rusum and quyud, the qaid and rasm, the traditions and limitations of having to now survive without shirin. I'll have to get up in the morning and have breakfast and I won't feel like eating, whatever, things like that. And he thought of life without shirin and hit himself and committed suicide. But if he was a real lover, he didn't need an axe. He should have died of a broken heart. And this is what, you know, happened to one of the characters in Mere Paas Tum Ho, this play from Pakistan, which shows exactly what Ghalib idealizes as the true love. Now, the reason I'm reading this shir to you is so beautiful. And as soon as I saw this play and this scene, it brought me to this shir. And to me, it's very strange, but it starts me thinking about all kinds of things, because this is Ghalib's idea. When you make the familiar suddenly strange, that, oh, we all idealize Farhad, but Ghalib is pointing a finger at him. You start thinking, you know, that, oh, the familiar is suddenly strange. So what is he trying to do? And then it started me thinking about a kind of thing about this young man, Farhad. He was a stonemason. He wanted to cross the limits that have been set. And he ached for a married woman who's a princess. Think of all these issues. And then he basically violates all the most fundamental principles of society, right? And it makes me start thinking about, well, in science also, this is exactly what I'm dealing with all the time, that I'm dealing, normally in our body, the liver cells stay in the liver, cells in the pancreas stay in the pancreas, cells in the ovaries stay in the ovaries. Only in cancer, they start walking about. You know, how odd is that? Suddenly, a familiar thing becomes so strange.
Yeah, alien.
Completely alien, that like there's a new species within us. And this new species has not only found a way to cross all kinds of boundaries and walk out of the organs in which they're supposed to stay. Pancreatic cancer cells end up in the lungs, in the liver, in the bones, right? In terms of metastatic disease, or anywhere, stage 4 cancer starts spreading out. But it now is behaving like an animal that's living with us. And this is the first thing that had fascinated me about cancer, by the way, that here is a cell in our body which we give birth to, which has found the secret to immortality. It can live forever. It's no other life form on planet Earth has been able to do this, Sadhya.
Yeah.
So, in other words, poetry opens up unconventional boundaries, challenges dogma. And for me, that's exactly what cancer is doing.
Brilliant. I am fascinated, to say the least, how you balance these two and how passionate you are about these two. It's just amazing because, as you said, it helps you through. So it's a lifeline, really. One, please tell us, I have your book. However, please tell the audience where they can go find your book.
In Pakistan, it was released earlier this last year in March by Lightstone Publication, Amina Sayed. It's available all over Pakistan. And in fact, people who read it, some of them were so moved, they bought thousands of copies and donated it free to medical students. I'm not taking any royalties from these. And then HarperCollins in India brought out the book in August in India, and it's done, you know, it's creating waves. And by the way, I must tell you one thing. Yesterday, a friend of mine called me, who happened to be on a call with several people who are deciding some of the healthcare policies, especially related to cancer. And also online was Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister. And one of the things my friend told me he said is that, well, he's reading two books on cancer, or he has read rather two books on cancer. And one is the very masterful Emperor of All Maladies by Siddhartha Mukherjee. And the other, he said, is a provocative book by Professor Azra Raza. So I was very flattered that Prime Minister Boris Johnson has read my book and is thinking about some of the things I have said, that the future of cancer treatment and cure rests on prevention. The reaction is subdued because I have challenged the entire establishment, right? At every level, I've challenged academia, I've challenged institutions like FDA and NCI, I've challenged industry, I've challenged the public to stop being duped into this delusional idea that end-stage cancer is curable within our lifetime. Nothing much has happened for these people. But as the book has now been translated into 9 languages, plus it is being published by, you know, English-speaking, English version in so many countries. In France, the book was released in November, and I can't tell you the kind of positive reaction it's having, because they're not worried. They have not attacked their institutions. So I think it's making more waves outside America, and I hope, since I don't have decades to live anymore, I'm an old hag, I'm really counting on the next couple of years to make this paradigm shift.
And I wish you all the very best. However, I just hope that there is no direct threat to you being based in the U.S. And with what, as you're saying, you've challenged the institution.
That is so sweet of you. But fortunately, I'm now in a position where it would be hard for people to attack me, because I see 30 to 40 cancer patients a week. I have a cutting edge research lab. I'm a cancer widow. I mean, what are people going to threaten me with?
So now you're talking about threat, and since you're a complete walking encyclopedia on poetry, what is the kind of response we should have when we feel threatened, poetically?
How sweet, which means, look, I think the most important thing always is that you have found something important enough to be following your quest, in which the threat matters, which is a vital threat that could kill you, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that all our poets tell us the same thing. And I'll end with a sher by Mir Taqi Mir, which is one of my favorite shers. It is so shocking. We should think like this. Basically, he's saying, "Dair se utke kaabe aaya Mir." There is a place where idols are, temple where idols are worshipped. So, Dair se utke kaabe aaya Mir. Mir has left those temples of idol worship and has arrived in the Kaaba, in meaning that he has given earthly love for divine love, right? And ostensibly, this is a very good thing. Except for the second line, "Dair se utke kaabe aaya Mir, jisko chahe khuda kharab kare." Meaning, आशिकी से मिलेगा ए जाहिद, बंदगी से खुदा नहीं मिलता. इवन टू रीच गॉड यू हैव टू सर्व मैन, इवन टू फाइंड डिवाइन लव यू हैव टू गो थ्रू अर्थली लव. इन अदर वर्ड्स, अंटिल योर वेरी लास्ट ब्रेथ योर ड्यूटी इज टू कॉन्स्टेंटली सर्व mankind. And the way to deal with your threats is that the threat serves to inspire you to now dedicate yourself with twice as much energy as you were using before.
Wow. Like, wow. I am floored. I totally agree with you. It is about keeping a balance between the worldly life and the divine. And yes, you're right. If we have to reach him, it has to be through service. It has
Absolutely.
To be through service.
And so all our poets tell us this, by the way. Every one of our classic poets make fun of Zahid, Naseh, Mullah, you know, all these characters who are representing the orthodoxy and who are instructing us in didactic ways to fall in line and start doing that. But also let me end with another gorgeous shair about the same thing. Agha Hashar Kashmiri. What a beautiful line he has penned. गो हरम के रास्ते से वो पहुंच गए खुदा तक. मीनिंग इफ यू सिट एंड से अल्लाह अल्लाह इन अ मॉस्क, यस यू कैन रीच गॉड, बट दैट्स द इजी वे आउट, राइट? व्हाट हैव यू डन? जस्ट सिट देयर एंड से अल्लाह अल्लाह. गो हरम के रास्ते से वो पहुंच गए खुदा तक, तेरी रह गुजर से जाते तो कुछ और बात होती. Again, the same thing. What is teri reh guzar? That is facing the crushing disappointments of life and not giving in to them, getting up and going again and again and again. That's what it means. You cannot be threatened once you have your heart and soul involved. And this is why I think there is no distinction between art and science at this. Science is supposed to be devoid of emotions, and art is supposed to express emotions. I think it's nonsensical to say we only can devote ourselves to science when we are emotionally involved in it.
True, so true. And just that point where you said that you can just sort of isolate yourself and sit and find God. And that is the only reason why it might have been true in the Jewish tradition and the biblical tradition, whereby you give up your regular life to be a priest or a nun. But it's not something that our faith encourages at all. You have to be in the now with the world.
Yes, but you can't escape pain. Yeah. Rather, the whole idea of the Sufi tradition, Sadia, is to welcome affliction. Face it. That's what is going to make you stronger. Face the threat down.
So true. You make it sound quite positive and promising.
Of course it is. Once your heart is in the quest, फिर तो वही है कि बेहिरसु हवस बे खौफ खतर, इस हाथ में सर इस कफ पे जिगर, यूं कुए सनम में वक्त सफर नजारे बामे नाज किया. वाह फैज साहब, इवन एज आई एम डाइंग आई हैव माय हेड इन वन हैंड एंड माय जिगर और सोल इन द अदर हैंड एंड आई एम सेइंग फेयरवेल टू द बिलवड्स थ्रेशहोल्ड. Still offering everything I have. And the beloved is the quest you have, whether it is to cure cancer or to build a bridge or whatever your quest is. Till your last breath, you are offering your everything.
Brilliant and brilliance. Totally. Yes, there is a joy in this sacrifice as well, when you offer yourself fully or to completely. Yeah.
Absolutely. That is the only way to live, Sadia. there is something bigger than us, something bigger than life. And I told you that you will feel the narrative intensity of these poets once you appreciate what they are saying. They work on the skin, it feels like, but they are making deep incisions into the skin to look inside.
I think you've given us enough incisions also.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Not at all, not at all. Just joking.
No, so let me read a very nice shayar from the same ghazal I read. Ye baja kali ne khilkar kiya gul sita mautar. Yes, the bud opened up and the whole garden became fragrant. Ye baja kali ne khilkar kiya gul sita mautar. Magar aap muskurate to kuch aur baat hoti. Goharam ke raaste se wo pahunch gaye khuda tak. Teri reh guzar se jaate. Ye khule khule se gesu inhe laakh tu samare. Mere haath se samarte to kuch aur baat hoti. How gorgeous.
Incredible. Incredible. And truly, truly appreciate the time that you've given me and the audience. And I plan to have a conversation with you again. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you so much. Khuda hafiz.
Take care.